Morning. Today's daf from Baba Basra is Chaf Gimel. We're on Chaf Beis Amud Beis. We are starting towards the top of the Amud. We're going to be starting today with the words Amar Rav, a continuation of yesterday's Mishnah. The Mishnah yesterday talked about putting up walls between two neighboring properties. That has been the theme since the beginning of the Masechta. Third week now in, we're starting the fourth week of the Masechta. And we are still discussing how to make for a good neighbor. So a wall between the two is good. The Mishnah on the bottom, Chav Beis Amud Aleph, described where basically you had a wall between the two neighboring properties and you wanted to build another wall. So in order to build a second wall, so you have to distance it from the neighboring wall at a distance of 4 amos. Why? So the Mishnah doesn't give a reason why, but Rav does. And as we learned yesterday, Rav Yehuda does, I should say. If you take a look at the very top of Chav Beis Amud Beis, so Rav Yehuda gives the reason. So he says they have to put it at a distance of 4 amos. So Rava asked him the question. So that doesn't seem to be the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says Misha Yakolo so samach lekoso chaveiro. Doesn't the Mishnah sound like your wall is right up against the other wall? To which Rav Yehuda says no. Rava says no. Ela merava hachi ketani Misha Yakolo samach lekoso chaveiro berichuk arba amos v'nafal lo yismach lekoso acher elam kain hiruchuk mimenu dalar amos. So Rava's explanation is that no, the original wall that you put up along the neighboring wall was actually 4 amos away. It falls down. It does not give you the right to put up a new wall any closer. You must maintain a distance of 4 amos from the neighboring wall. Now, why should that be? So his explanation is, because what you want is you want a walking path between the walls. And the Gemara has an assumption that it will continue for the remainder of this Amud, or actually until the Mishnah. And that is that once you have people walking past a wall, it'll fortify the wall. It basically will pound the ground down that is right next to the wall. And that will basically give a proper reinforcement for the ground, which gives a proper reinforcement for the wall. And the Gemara says, under those circumstances, that's why you must allow 4 amos between walls, because you must allow for people to walk through. People walking alongside the wall is actually good for the wall. So that is Rava's assertion, and with that we continue with the Gemara, where we left off yesterday with the words Amar Rav, and the Gemara is basically going to challenge this assertion. Amar Rav lo shanu ala kosel ginava kosel chatzim balismach samech. Rav says that it was only taught regarding the kosel of a garden. But if it's a wall of a courtyard, so then you could put your wall right up alongside the other wall. Rabbi Yoshi Amar Echad Kosel Ginav Echad Kosel Chatzer Im Balis Machinav Samech, and Rav Yoshi says no. You must always maintain a distance of 4 amos between your wall and the neighboring wall. Amar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chinev Lo Pligin. Now Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chinev says, look, I know it seems like we have a debate over here, but he says, but I really feel that there's no debate whatsoever. Habi'ir Yishana, Habi'ir Chadash, it depends on whether it's a new city or an old city. Meaning, if it's an old city, this wall's been around for a long time, and whatever fortification was needed was provided, being that this wall's been around for a long time. However, if it's a new city where we need the traffic and we need the pounding of the ground right up against the wall, so then under all circumstances, you have to make distance between your wall and the neighboring wall. Gemara does not elaborate, and Rashi does not comment. So I'd only be guessing, and I there's no point in me doing that. Okay, it's a good question. I just don't know. Tanan. So okay, we go back to our Mishnah, and let's remind ourselves what we learned back in the Mishnah. You
60 years.
Okay, I'm sure he quotes somebody. Okay. The 60 years is the number he gave. So chalonos bei malamalam bei malamata bei mechenek denar ba'amo. So the windows, if you were building a wall up against somebody's window, so it's got to go either higher than the window 4 amos, it's got to go lower than the window 4 amos, and also it has to be at a distance of 4 amos from somebody else's windows. So all, you have to keep all these into consideration when building a wall against somebody's window. Why? Tini Allah. So the Gemara is going to now quote a Bryce, and the Bryce is going to tell us why. Meaning that if your wall is going to be higher than the other person's window, it's got to be 4 amos higher than the other person's window. Because if it runs parallel with another person's window, what you'll do is you climb up to the top of your wall and you'll see what's going on over there. Therefore, you have to make sure that if it's going to be higher than the window, make it higher than 4 amos. Now, yes, it's true. You still will have an angle into the other person's house, but it will really be the angle. Once it's 4 amos higher than the person's window, it really will not be much of a view. Okay, and milamatan shalo yamar v'yira. Also, if you're building a wall that's lower than somebody's window, so it's got to be lower than 4 amos than somebody else's window. Again, what would happen if it was anything up to anything closer than that is you'd stand on the window. Again, the average height of a person, as we've gone over time and again, is about 3 amos. So you'd stand on the window and you look in. So if it's going to be lower than somebody's window, it's got to be lower than 4 amos. And finally, mechenegdem shelo ya'afil. And also, make sure that it's at a distance of 4 amos from somebody else's window. Because if you put it up right against a person's window, he will lose all sunlight, and you can't do that to somebody's house. And so therefore, he has to be at a distance of 4 amos away from the wall. So we have now dimensions of being higher, being lower, and being away from somebody's wall for the reasons of the first two are for Hezek Re'iyah, and for the third one, it's because you're going to darken it. Now, you'll notice that we learned the Mishnah, we learned the Braisa. You know what's clearly not in consideration? This idea of having a pathway for people to walk by. And the Gemara asked exactly that question. Time is shalom yafil, ava mishum daf shalom. Clearly, the Braisa didn't have this as a consideration, that we need people to walk past the wall, and that's why we need space. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says over here, I'll tell you why the Braisa didn't take that into consideration, because we're not talking about a wall that's running parallel to somebody's window. We're talking about a wall that's running perpendicular to somebody's window. Yeah, the wall is being built at a 90-degree angle from somebody's house. It's perpendicular. And under those circumstances, now we don't have to take into consideration spacing, because if it's perpendicular, clearly there's enough space for people to walk by. Vikama. Okay, and now the Gemara says like this. Okay, so now if you're building a wall that's running perpendicular to somebody's house, so what kind of distance do you need to make from the wall to the window? So Amar Yeva Chamud Da'isham Ben Nidbach Mishmei Deraf. So the Gemara quotes an Amara, which, quite frankly, not that popular. We haven't heard his name much that Shas, but he quotes in the name of Rav Kemalei Rachav Chalon, a single Tefach. Like we learned just the other day in the Daf, the Chalon's width was, generally speaking, a Tefach. The windows were very small. So that's how far a perpendicular wall needs to be away from the window, just but one tefach. Now, the halom etzit, so the Gemara says, okay, but aren't you going to be able to stand on the wall and look into the other person's window? Amar Rav Zvid, b'madir es koslo. So the Gemara says, over here it's not a concern, because in this particular case we're talking about where the wall is not a, does not have a flat top to it, but the wall goes down b'madron, it goes down as a on an angle, and so therefore there's nowhere to stand on the wall, so that's why we're not worried in this circumstance that a person is going to stand on the wall. So the Gemara says, okay, but we learned in the Mishnah that you have to make sure that your wall is at a distance from somebody's window, a distance of 4 amos, so that it doesn't block the sunlight. Over here, you're making a perpendicular wall, and it's only one tefach away from somebody's window, and that's okay. So the Gemara says, again, we're going to make a very simple difference between a perpendicular wall and a parallel wall. When it's a parallel wall and it's right up against somebody's window, so now it's creating a blockage on shnei tzadim, on both sides. What the Gemara describes as shtei ruchos. So that's why you have to make sure that's 4 amos away from somebody's window, so it doesn't block. But if it's a perpendicular wall, so it's now miruach achas, it's only attacking the window from one side, which means on the other side it's totally open, so then there's no problem whatsoever. And you just have to make a distance of one tefach from the window, but outside of that, a perpendicular wall can be placed up to one tefach away from somebody's window. Tashma. Again, the Gemara now is going to challenge Rava one more time. Again, Rava says that the distance between walls has to be made so that people can walk through them in order to create fortification for the wall. Again, we didn't see that in the Mishnah. We didn't see that in the Braisa. The Gemara still defended Rava. The Gemara now is going to quote a Mishnah. It sounds that way. Okay, fine. Okay. I mean, also width and height, meaning if the wall is significantly higher than the person's window, even meiruch achas, it's still gonna block out a lot of light. It sounds that way.
The original wall is going to block.
Right. And
why should you then have to move 4 amos?
Well, that's what the Gemara explained. No, the Gemara explained at the beginning of the sugya that was the havamina, that it was, and but the maskana is that no, even the original wall was not within 4 amos. So you're saying over the Havamina of the Gemara, but the Maskana was no, that the original wall, even the original wall, was not 4 amos. Okay. Again, I know the Gemara is not being very detailed, but The Gemara is just giving us a basic, basic outline. Tashma. The Gemara is going to quote now one more Mishnah, and this Mishnah also is going to not seem to take Rava into consideration. This Mishnah is actually coming up in just a moment. We're going to see this Mishnah inside. But Tashma Zekosam and Amas Chila Dal Amos Kedei She Yehei Zokef Es Asulam. You want to build a wall, but you're building it up against somebody's gutter. You have to make sure that there's a 4 amah distance between the gutter and the wall. Why? Because you know that when a person has a gutter, you also know that the person's going to need to clean the gutter. And he's going to have to put a ladder. He can't put a ladder directly under the gutter. The ladder's going to fall, he's going to fall. So, and obviously it has to be at a distance. So you need 4 amah space between your gutter and a wall in order to make room for the ladder. Now, time mishum sulam. So over here, again, distance, why? Having nothing to do with dafsha, because of people needing to walk past, but having to do with the ladder. So, avamishum dafsha lo. So, again, it's another Mishnah that doesn't seem to take this dafsha into consideration. So, the Gemara says, b'mayiskinan b'maschila mishupas di'i mishum dafsha ha'ka'azav asitusei. So, the Gemara says that over here it's a slanted gutter, which means basically that there already is a distance between your house and the other person's house, or your wall and the other person's wall, and so therefore there is already place for people to walk underneath, and so therefore dafsha now is taken into account. But there is one other consideration that you need to take into account, which is that he's going to want to get to the top of the gutter, and so for that you're going to need another 4 amos in order for him to get to the top of the top of his gutter. So although admittedly the Mishnayos and the Braisos do not take this consideration of Rava that you need distance between walls so that people can walk past the wall, but the Gemara defended Rava throughout. We start now the next Mishnah. We're in Chav Beis Amud Beis. We're at the bottom, towards the bottom of the Amud. Marchikin es asulam in ashavach arba amos kedei shlo tikbots anemia. Okay, you are going to put up a ladder, and it's right next to somebody's shavach. We're going to be talking today a lot about birdhouses. Okay, people put up a birdhouse. Okay, and what happens if you've ever put one up? I have not. Is that birds come all from all over into your birdhouse, and they perch in your birdhouse? Okay. A simple question, which we really can discuss before we discuss the Mishnah and the Gemara coming up. Do those birds belong to you? May Iker Hadin, the answer, of course, is no. You didn't do anything. You didn't make a kinyan on those birds. Now, yes, they're in your chatzer. I hear that. But you didn't actively do anything, and the birds can fly away at any point in time. So may Iker Hadin, the birds don't really belong to you. However, we learned back in the Masechta Gittin that if somebody were to walk onto your property, take those birds with the claim that, hey, those birds don't really belong to you, so you'll say to him, get off my property right about now. And it will lead to fighting between people. So, Mishum Darchei Shalom, so the Gemara in Gittin tells us in the fifth parak that what the Chachamim instituted is that once birds are on your property, so even though may Iker Hadin, those birds don't belong to you, but Mishum Darchei Shalom, we're going to say that those birds belong to you. And somebody comes and now takes that birds off your property, so he's in violation of Gzeila Midrabanan. So that is rabbinic theft. So, and this was enacted in order to make Shalom between people. So, that's a general discussion, which is important just to keep in mind. That point will help us out a little bit later this morning. In the meantime, we start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah here talks about my ladder in somebody else's birdhouse. The Mishnah tells us that when I'm putting up a ladder in my property, I got to make sure it's at a distance of 4 amos from somebody else's birdhouse. Kedesh lo tikpots animia. Because what happens is that if I make a ladder and it's proximate to somebody else's birdhouse, so you're going to have some sort of wildcat, a bobcat, a panther,
weasel.
A weasel, okay. Whatever you want to describe it as. But basically, you're going to have now an allowance of an animal climbing up your ladder, jumping over to the birdhouse, and killing somebody else's birds. So you have to keep that in mind, and therefore, you have to distance your ladder from the birdhouse a total of 4 amos, and the weasel is not going to be able to jump from one to the other. And also, you're building a wall, and you see somebody's gutter, so you know that that person with his gutter is going to need 4 amos of operating room, like we discussed just a moment ago. We already just quoted this Mishnah, but here's the Mishnah inside. And you have to make allowance for him to put a ladder down in order for him to get up onto his roof in order to clear the gutter. Okay, so Lema Masisin Delo Kareb Yossi. Now, what have we just all learned together? That I have to take into consideration what's going on my neighbor's property, even though what I'm doing is totally on my property. And the Mishnah says you still have to take it into account. And therefore, when I'm putting up a ladder, even though his shovach is on his property, I have to take it into consideration, even though the ladder's on my property. And even though the gutter's on his property, I have to take that into consideration when building my wall on my property. And so basically, even though it's my property, I have to take into consideration what's going on in your property. And like we've seen already a number of times, but we get to see it again, this is a common theme of the second parak of Baba Basra. Rav Yossi says, I can do whatever I want to my property, and even if it may adversely affect you, but it doesn't matter because it's my property and I can do what I want on my property, and I'll dig a hole in my property and you'll plant in your property, and later there may be consequences, but right now Rav Yossi says I can do what I want on my property. So our Mishnah seemingly is not going like Rav Yossi. Now Rashi points out over here there are many Mishnayos in the second parak that are not going like Rav Yossi. Basically, what the Gemara is just commenting right now is maybe we should add our Mishnah to the list. To the list of a number of Mishnayos that don't go like Rav Yossi.
Why are we still picking on Rav Yossi? Like?
It's not a question of picking. It's just, it's an observation. Meaning we know...
It goes against so many other people also. Like, why are we like...
No, but over here, on this second parak, Rav Yossi has a Shita, which the Mishnayos clearly are not in agreement with. And again, I'm just... You see the first Rashi on the Gemara? The Rashi says... Many Mishnahs do not go like Rav Yossi. But basically, let's just add this one to the list as well. Fine. So the Gemara says, And over here, by the way, the Gemara wants to point out that Rav Yossi would agree in our Mishnah for the following reason. We were in the yeshiva Rav Kahana, Hava Amar, Modi Rav Yossi, Begiri Dide. Look, Rav Yossi generally says that you can do what you want on your property. And if it may adversely affect the neighbor next to you, according to Rav Yossi, that doesn't matter. However, even Rav Yossi has the following proviso. That is, that if what you're going to do is directly affect the person next to you, even Rav Yossi will tell you that you can't do that. It's what the Gemara describes as giri didei, which literally means your arrows. So if you're doing something which is basically going to now directly shoot arrows into your neighbor's property, so over here, effectively, that's what, that even Rav Yossi would say that you cannot do that. By laying down a wall too close, by putting a ladder directly next to somebody else's shovach, so that is what the Gemara now describes as giri didei. It's your arrows. And even Rav Yossi would agree. Hachanami zimlin debahadi demanachle yasva b'chur v'kafza. So the Gemara says, because over here, how can we describe this as giri didei? Meaning, again, to make the argument of giri didei, that means that there has to be a direct and immediate impact on what I'm doing. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how. Because the weasel could be hiding in a hole, you're going to put down the ladder right next to your neighbor's birdhouse, and by you putting down the ladder, the weasel is going to pop right out of the hole, jump right on the ladder, and it will be a direct and immediate effect of that which you did. And that's why the case of the Mishnah is what is referred to as giri didei, and that's why even Rav Yossi would agree. So the Gemara says, v'hagramahu. So the Gemara says, okay, but still, even in the way that I just described it, which parenthetically is Rashi, even the way I just described it, but isn't that still grama? Meaning, you didn't take the weasel and throw it onto your neighbor's birdhouse. All you did is facilitate to allow the weasel to climb up the ladder and to go to your neighbor's birdhouse. So this is still not biadayim. It's not nezek biadayim. It's still just grama. And aren't you exempt from grama? So the Gemara says exactly like you just said. So grama hu amar avtuvi barmasa zosemer grama benizakin aser. So we have two interesting comments by grama. So grama benizakin is pater. I know that's not what the Gemara said, but you hear that all the time throughout the Bavas, that if it's grama, you're not going to be liable to pay, but that doesn't mean it's okay. It just simply means you're exempt from monetary liability. But in terms of, can you do it? No, you can't do it. Grama benizakin aser. It's prohibited to do. Now, very interesting Rashi over here. Grumman ben Zakkan Aser, second to last Rashi in the Amud. Ve'afil l'man damar. I'm reading the Rashi. Ve'afil l'man damar dolo dan dina degarmi u pater melashalem aser ligrom ukeshe labala hamid grama lehezik chaver ma'akev. So, a couple of interesting things out of this Rashi. Throughout the Bavas, you've heard the word garmi, and probably at one point in time, I said in the past that garmi is not the same as grama. Rashi consistently throughout the Bavas and throughout Shas does not see a difference between grama and garmi. Meaning, when the Gemara uses the word garmi, according to Rashi, it's just another way of saying the word grama. Meaning, this fine distinction that we generally assume that grama means indirect and garmi is something closer to direct, and garmi is like some middle ground between nezik biadayim and grama. That's probably what I've said previously in another daf. Rashi over here, quoting the Gemara in Baba Kama, discussing Dina de Garmi, Rashi says, you know, Grama, Garmi, it's all the same. Because according to Rashi, it is all the same. Rashi does not see a difference between them. Chachmei Sfard, right? The Rishonim living in Spain, Barcelona. So they were the ones who made this very fine distinction between Grama and Garmi. Anyway, that's just one interesting point out of Rashi. And the other thing is that, again, just saying Pshat in our Gemara, just because you're exempt from grama, garmi, grama, according to Rashi, same thing, just because you're exempt doesn't mean it's okay. It's not okay. In fact, it's so not okay that if you're going to do something which will cause damage to somebody else, the other person can say you're not allowed to do it. Not only can the other person say that, Basin can say that, meaning you're simply not allowed to do it. Now, if you do it and damage occurs, you're not going to be financially liable. But that doesn't mean it's okay. It's not. Bottom of Chavez Amud Beis, Rav Yosef Havale, Hanutale, Dahavi Ase Umane Vyasvi Tusayu, Vase Orve Achladama Vesalka Abetale, Umasi de Tamari. So Gemara tells the following story regarding Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef had these young palm trees with dates growing from them, and bloodletters were working right next to his palm tree. For the purposes of illustration, let's just assume that the bloodletters were on their own property. Okay, and it fits in very well to our discussion over here, where basically, right, they're each on their own separate properties, but next to one another. Okay, I know the Gemara doesn't say that, but again, just for the purposes, let's just assume that. And these bloodletters, so their job is bloodletting. So that means that a person would come and they would relieve it. They would express blood out of the person. And back in the good old days, that was super popular and regarded as medicinally beneficial. And the problem is that as a bloodlet right next to Rav Yosef's palm trees, so the ravens would come. Ravens would be attracted to the blood. Now, what would happen next? The Gemara is not super clear. Tosos later comments that what could possibly be is that then once the ravens with their beaks basically smeared with blood, you'll forgive me, I know it's indelicate, but with their beaks smeared with blood, will then climb onto the palm tree and basically smear the blood on the dates. Okay, that's disgusting, but Tosha says that's one way to look at what's going on over here. So va'ase orve achle dame, so they would eat the blood. V'salke abetali, they would then go up onto the dates, onto the palm trees. Umafsede tamari, and they would cause a loss for the dates. Again, the Gemara is not clear about exactly what happened, but Tosha suggests that maybe that's what happened. They smeared the blood onto the dates. In any event, amalu Rav Yosef afikuli korkor me'acha. So Rav Yosef now turns to the bloodletters who were right next door to him and said, you're going to stop practicing right here, right now. Meaning, I don't want to see ravens anymore. The ravens are causing a damage to my dates, and I want to stop right now. So Amale Abaye Vagramahu. So Abaye says, okay, but they're not directly causing damage. They're doing their job of bloodletting. And everything after that is just grama. It's all indirect. But to which the Gemara says, okay, but let's now say what we just learned a moment ago, which is that, yes, financially you're not liable, but that doesn't mean it's okay. It's not okay. It's aser. It's prohibited to do that. Now, next comment to the Gemara, v'ha achzik lehu. But the Gemara says, yeah, but these bloodletters have been here for some time now, and they have a chazaka. Now again, when we say the word chazaka over here, let's make the distinction that we've made already before, but let's say it again. There are two types of chazakas that basically we're going to be describing. I mean, there's more than two, but in the context of our discussion, chazaka, which we're going to see in the third parak coming up a week from now, is going to be chezkas kinyan, meaning where I sat on somebody's property for 3 years undisturbed, uninterrupted, with a claim that the property belongs to me. So I have now what is called squatter's rights, but more than squatter's rights, squatter's ownership. Over here, when we're talking about chazaka, we're talking about cheskas tashmish. We're talking about right of usage, meaning since the, this is the bloodletter's argument, since we've been doing this so long here for some for an undisturbed period of time, so therefore, basically, we have the right to continue doing it over here. That's their argument. That's cheskas tashmish. So the Gemara. Right. And parenthetically, good question. And parenthetically, Tosfos over here has a machlokus amongst the Balei HaTosfos, second Tosfos on the Amud, whether or not cheskas tashmish needs a taina, whether it needs a claim. Meaning, we're going to see in the third perek that for chazaka of ownership, so there you need a taina, there you need a claim. Does cheskas tashmish need a claim as well? Tosfos debates that in the second Tosfos on our Amud. In the meantime, however, back to our Gemara, so why don't we have what's called a cheskas tashmish? So the Gemara says, Ha'am Rav Nachman, Amarava Baravua, in chazaka l'nizakin. So the Gemara gives us another very big rule, and that is that you cannot claim cheskas tashmish when it is damaging to other parties. So, yes, there's something called cheskas tashmish, where if I've been doing something here for so long, I have the now an established right to do that. That may be true, but when that which I'm doing is damaging other people, I don't have such a chazaka. So the Gemara says, well, wait 1 second. But the Gemara says, even that general rule of ein chazaka l'tashmish, sorry, ein chazaka l'nizakin, that is not as general as presented. The Gemara quotes Amarayim who say that it's limited. Rav Mari says it's limited to smoke. And parenthetically, Tosfos says not just a little bit of smoke, but Tosfos says we're talking about the smoke that comes off of a kivshan, right? Nira Lari, next Tosfos, fourth Tosfos on the Amud, I should say. Nira Lari, the dafka bekusha de kivshan, shu gadol amazik biyoser ein chazaka. We're talking about billowing smoke that comes out of an oven, or Razvid says besakise, the noxious fumes that comes out of an outhouse. So those are the kinds of chazakas where you can't say, well, look, I've been using this outhouse for years right over here. You can't say, I therefore have an established usage of this outhouse. If your outhouse is right next to my property, I can say to you, no such chazaka. Meaning, and you're going to have to move it. But, right, presumably. Okay, I'm not sure, but presumably. What we're seeing over here now is that even this rule of Ein Chazaka L'Nizakin is not as broad and is not as general. It is limited to billowing smoke, the noxious fumes of an outhouse. So Armalei Hani L'Didza. So then now this is Rav Yosef who's going to make the following claim. To me, the blood that is being spread by the ravens onto my dates are as noxious as the billowing smoke and as the fumes of an outhouse. Amarle hani lididi de anina daite. Rav Yosef admits that he is sensitive. And kikuchu beisakisa damoli, it's just like smoke, it's just like the noxious fume of a bathhouse, and therefore to me, it's just as bad. A couple of interesting points over here. Tosfos, again, lididi danina daiti. Tosfos quotes the Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim says, it's in the 10th parak of Pesachim, shlosha chayehem eina chayim. Three people whose lives are not really lives, meaning that they have a certain characteristic which just makes their lives miserable. And it's just bad to be these kinds of people, which are rachmanim, raschanim, and anine dais. People who are way too merciful, people who are way too angry, and people who are sensitive and super delicate. And I'm Rav Yosef, v'kulu aisnehu bi. And then Rav Yosef makes an admission, really, an open and honest admission, that he's all three of those. So, just interesting, by the way, to be both a Rachman and a Raschan, meaning to be overly compassionate and also to have a temper. Okay, but anyway, Rav Yosef admits that he's all three. So Tosfos just points out the consistency between the Gemara in Pesachim and our Gemara over here, where Rav Yosef makes the admission that he's very sensitive.
And it was compassion of the other.
Right. It can happen. It's just normally in my experience they don't seem to go hand in hand, but Clearly they do. Okay, in the meantime, what we basically now have seen is that there's something called Cheskas Tashmish, that once I've been using it here for a certain amount of time, I can make the claim, therefore, that I'm entitled to make usage. Parenthetically, the Gemara over here does not mention for Cheskas Tashmish how long a period of time you've made use of it, meaning that we know for Cheskas ownership, so Cheskas Kinyan, so we know it's 3 years. That we're going to be, it's going to be pounded into us in the third parak of Baba Basra. For Cheskas Tashmish, it doesn't, the Gemara does not talk about a timeline. But there's something called Cheskas Tashmish. There's also something called Nizakin, meaning that if your Cheskas Tashmish is damaging to me, then I'm going to debunk your Cheskas Tashmish. But the Gemara limits that to only certain Nizakin, like billowing smoke and noxious fumes of an outhouse. The interesting thing that Rav Yosef is arguing, and again, I don't know if his argument is how accepted his argument is that, but to me, I'm so sensitive that I'll make the argument that even though for other people this is not as noxious, but to me it is, and therefore he wants the bloodletters to move their practice to another place within their property. Okay. Yeah, in other words, not just being on the land, but being in a certain place in the land. Meaning that I'm practicing right now on my property that is right up against your property.
But you can't put it on my property.
Oh, no, that's a given. That's an assumption I assume going into this Gemara. Let's leave it at that. Okay, let's go on in the Mishnah. Okay, we're on Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. We are now continuing in the Mishnayos in the second parak. Marchikin es Hashofach min ha'ir chamishim ama. When you set up a birdhouse, so it has to be at a distance from the city of 50 amas. Why? So if you take a look at the Rashi in the Mishnah, Marchikin Hashofach min ha'ir, Rashi writes, Shayonim afsidim zeronim ginos. Because what's going to happen is that if you set up a birdhouse right next to somebody's, right next to somebody's garden, so what you're basically doing is you're going to be attracting the birds to the birdhouse. The birds are then going to be moving from the birdhouse into your neighbor's garden and eating your neighbor's garden. So, if you're setting up a birdhouse not on your property, we'll get to that in just a second, but if you're setting up a birdhouse outside the city, it's got to be 50 amos away from somebody's garden. The Mishnah continues. V'lo yaseh adam shavach pesach shalom, elim ken yesh lo chamishim am lechol ruach. Similarly, if you're going to set up a birdhouse in your own property, you have to take the same consideration, which is that you have to have a big enough property where it's going to be 50 amos away from somebody else's property. So that means that it has to be center in your property, or somewhere central in your property, where from every side it's going to be 50 amos away from somebody else's property.
And you have a case of the latter being within 4 amos.
Okay, good. It's a great question. The Mishnah, as we get to the end of the Mishnah, perhaps we'll have an answer to your question. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Beis Arba Kurim, Malay Shkar Hayon. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. It has to be an area of 4 Kurin, which is the amount of one swoop of the bird. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda says that it has to be a much greater distance than just 50 Amos. The Imlakho Afilo Beis Rova, Harehu Becheskasal. However, if you buy a property, and that property is a very small property, Rova Akav. Okay, I don't know, from a linear measurement standpoint, I don't know how much that is, but it's a really small property. And and there's a birdhouse sitting on this property. And it obviously did not meet the requisite amount distance necessary, as we just learned together. But obviously, the previous owner did it. We're going to assume he kind of worked it out with his neighbors. And therefore, since he had the right to do so, so when you buy the property, you're going to be afforded the same right. Okay. So, and this may, Yaakov, this may answer your question in terms of how could it have happened. So this would be a scenario. So what we just learned together in the Mishnah is that if you're going to build the birdhouse, it's got to be at a 50 amah distance. Rav Yehuda disagrees, it's got to be more, but like the Tana Kama, it's got to be a 50 amah distance. But if you have already seen somebody exercise his right, even though it's less than 50 amahs, and you buy that property, you can continue with that right. The Gemara starts off the discussion in the following place. Chamisha mama v'sulav v'reminu. Ein porsin ishmal yonim elayim ken ayarachuk min yishuv shloshim ris. If you're going to lay traps for birds, so it has to be 30 ris outside of the city. 30 ris, says Rashi, is 4 mil. 4 mil is 8,000 amma. 8,000 amas is a lot bigger than 50 amas. So, laying out traps, the Brisa says, it's got to be done outside the city, a distance of 8,000 amas. And meanwhile, building a birdhouse can be done within 50, as long as it's not within 50 amas of people's properties. That's obviously a big discrepancy. Amar Abaye Meshashay Tetuva V'Karsayu B'Chamishim Am Samalia. So Abaye gives a practical distinction to explain the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. In the Mishnah, we're talking about them going into neighboring gardens and eating in neighboring gardens. For food, they're not going to travel more than 50 amas. But in terms of how far they're going to actually fly and travel, so they'll go very far. In fact, they'll go 4 mil, 8,000 amas in terms of flying. So if it's just a concern of going into somebody else's property to eat food, 50 amas is a safe distance. If it's a concern of you're going to be trapping other people's birds, so they fly a distance of 4 mil, 8,000 amas. It says Abaye, that's the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Umesha Shoshim Ris V'Sulava Atanya, the Gemara says, now, if we're looking at their flight pattern, they go much more than 4 mil. Over Yushav Afilo Mea Mil, Lo Yifros. So the Gemara quotes another Braisa that says, even 100 mil, they're going to fly at such a distance. Rav Yosef Amar B'Yushav Kramim, Rav Amar B'Yushav Shovchim. So the Gemara says that, no, the Braisa that we just quoted, where was 100 amas, where they're going to fly even more than 100 amas, that's talking about where basically there were rest stops along the way. Right, my summer road trips. So what would I do without my rest stops? I'm not really sure. So I guess I wouldn't go. So over here, so Yishuv Kramim, so if there are basically vineyards that get the bird from one point to another point, so with these resting stops or the Yishuv Shovchim or other people's birdhouses, so therefore they can fly at even greater distances, and that's what the Brisa was describing when the Brisa says over 100 amas. I'm sorry, over 100 mil. Masha Ein came in the first Brisa that we learned together, where it was just 30 ris, which is just 4 mil, that's talking about without a rest stop. So the Gemara says, Fetevagle Mishim Shovchim Gufayu. Wait 1 second. So basically what you're saying is that we have to be worried that the birds are going to be flying at such a great distance because of the intervening birdhouses. Well, didn't we just learn together in the Mishnah that if somebody else's birdhouse is within proximity, so you shouldn't build a birdhouse closer, and you're going to be attracting their birdhouses? So, so the Gemara gives a number of answers. The intervening birdhouses can be your birdhouse, so therefore, not a problem, obviously. You're not taking anybody else's birds. Or it could be that the intervening birdhouses belong to a non-Jew. Now, we learned at the end of Baba Kama, you're not allowed to steal from a non-Jew. Right, Gezalako. Over here, as I pointed out in the beginning of the shiur before we started the Mishnah, that over here, in terms of taking other people's birds, it's not Gzela da Araisa. This is a Darche Shalom that was an institution, a kind of Darche Shalom. And you could make the argument, which the Gemara seems to be making, that over here, for Darche Shalom purposes, maybe that doesn't include Kanani. You can make that argument. The Gemara seems to be making that argument. Or it could very well be that the birdhouses, the intervening birdhouses, don't belong to anybody. So therefore, there's no problem. There's no concern about stealing other people's birds. Okay, so basically, what do we know? What have we learned together? That as far as birds going and gathering food, they're not going to go more than 50 amas. In terms of their flight pattern, if there's no rest stop, they're not going to go more than 4 mil. And if there are rest stops, they'll go over 100 mil. Rav Yehuda Amar Arba Kurim V'chulei Amar Apapa V'itemer Rav Zvid. Zos Omeris. Now, the Gemara is not commenting on Rav Yehuda, and you know that because the Gemara, when giving us the intro, said V'chulei, meaning look at the end of the Mishnah. What the Gemara now is commenting is on the last case of the Mishnah, notably the buyer. When you have somebody buying a piece of property and there's a birdhouse on the property and that birdhouse is not 50 amas away from somebody, from the border of the property, well, he must have worked it out. And so therefore, you can buy it now, and we'll argue on your behalf. Meaning, even though you didn't make the argument, then you didn't make the taina, but we'll argue on your behalf and we'll basically say, well, if the seller worked it out, the buyer is buying it with those same rights as well. Zosomeris, the Gemara says, Toranin lokech v'toranin liyoresh. We are going to learn the following rule for today. Another big rule for today. And that is that if a person can't make a claim because he's just simply uninformed, so Beis Din is going to make the claim for him. We'll say that for a Yorish and we'll say that for a Lokeach. Now, a Yorish, you totally understand. Meaning that it was dad's estate, it was dad's property, he died. Could very well be that he just simply did not have the opportunity to explain all the details to his kids. So, Ta'anin and Liyorish. So we're going to make a Tain on behalf of the Yorish. Same thing is true with the Lokeach. Even though, obviously, by the Lokeach, you can make the argument that, you know, all the information is being passed from seller to buyer. But the Gemara is saying, not necessarily. And if the seller has certain rights, even though they were not articulated during the transaction, those rights are going to be maintained and continued by the buyer. So the Gemara says, now these two points are the first point of Toanin and Lokeach is being clearly articulated in our Mishnah. Because you bought a property that's smaller than 50 amos, there's a birdhouse over there, I'm just continuing the rights that's used by the previous owner. Now, even though you didn't make the taina, we're going to make the taina for you. Now, Yorish Tanina. So the Gemara says, now, as far as Yorish is concerned, we already have a Mishnah teaching us that. Habamishum Yerusha Ein Hafserach Taina. That if you are taking a property and you didn't make the claim on the property, we're going to make the claim for you. So, Lokech Hitzarech Lei. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. We have a Mishnah for Yorish. We don't have a Mishnah for Lokeach, and that's why we need our Mishnah. The Gemara says, Lokeach nami tanina. Lokeach atzer uvaz vizin v'guz traos hare ze b'ches kasa. We will see a Mishnah together that talks about buying a house that's right next to the Rishos HaRabim. Now, obviously there's a borderline between your house and the Rishos HaRabim. And what you cannot do is you cannot take one of the boards of your house and have it extended into the Rishos HaRabim and make usage of such a board. However, if you were to recess your property into your borderline and then have the board sticking out, so then obviously it would be fine. If, let's say, you bought a house that has extended beams, so, and the previous owner clearly made usage of those extended beams that extend to the Rishos HaRabim. So we will assume that what he did was legitimate, and we're going to extend that courtesy to you, and we will say you can use it. And basically we're going to argue that either A, he recessed his house into his property, and the boards are going into his property, or we're going to make the other argument, which is that somehow, not really sure how this is going to work, but somehow he worked it out with the Rishos HaRabim. Now, I know there's nobody to talk to right in the Rishos HaRabim. I do understand that. But we're going to make that argument. You're going to see clearly in the Gemara that we're going to make that argument.
They've given part of his property to the Rishos HaRabim, and those beams that were sticking out really were in his own property.
So the Gemara says, so now, I see already Tanin and Liyarish in the Mishnah later on. I see Tanin and Lokeach in the Mishnah later on. And basically what the Gemara is now going to argue is, so why do I need our Mishnah? Tzricha. Gemara says, I still need our Mishnah. Di yashmin an hasen gabi Rishos HaRabim deimer konis l'soch shalohu ina me'achu le'achu b'nei Rishos HaRabim gabi. In the case of the house right up against the Rishos HaRabim, we will make the arguments I just made. You recess your house, you somehow worked it out with the Rishos HaRabim. But over here, I'm talking about now building a birdhouse on my property. I know I didn't build it. The seller built it. But maybe over here, he didn't work it out with anybody. He just did so on his own. Over here in our Mishnah, we're talking about your property that you bought and the neighbor's property, which is one on one. But when it comes to the Mishnah later on regarding your house up against the Rishos HaRabim, where it's you against the public, man pious or man shavik. Well, who okayed it? So I might have thought that Mishnah over there is, it can't be. That's why I need the Mishnah over there. It's Tzricha. So both Mishnayos are necessary. Hareu b'cheskaso. V'amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Baravuin Chazak L'Nizakin. Now, if you purchased a house with a birdhouse and there's not 50 amos from the birdhouse to your neighboring property, so you can say, well, the previous owner had rights. I'm going to continue those rights. The Gemara says, but didn't we learn today You don't even have to go back that far. We learned today's daf. Ain chazak l'nizakin. Well, if my usage is going to impinge on you, so I can't claim, well, I got usage. So the Gemara says, Ravami amar bekutra, and Razid amar bebesakisa. And again, the Gemara makes the point that we made already today, and that is, this rule of ain chazak l'nizakin is only for things that are extraordinarily noxious, like billowing smoke, like the fumes of an outhouse, but as far as things which are not as clearly damaging, we don't say ein chazak l'nizakin. And once the previous owner had rights and usages, I'm going to continue those rights and usages. Chav Gimel Amud Beis, we start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is this is a really above Metzia Mishnah, but we're talking about birds, we're talking about birdhouses, so this Mishnah is coming along for the ride. Nipol Hanimsa Besocha Mishim Amar Areyush Abal HaShavach. You have a bird that is within 50 amas proximity of the birdhouse, of your birdhouse, so that bird now you can safely assume belongs to you. Coming out of the birdhouse belongs to you. Chutz Mecha Mishim Amar Areyush Al Motza'o. If the bird is found 50 amas outside of the birdhouse, then it belongs to the finder's keeper. Nimsa bein shnei shavchos, karav lazeh shalo. If I find a bird that is somewhere between two birdhouses, obviously these two birdhouses are owned by two different people, so what is going to establish ownership? The principle of karov, proximity. Whoever it's more proximate to is going to be the rightful owner. Metzah metzah, but if the bird is found right in between the two, and proximity no longer becomes a determinant, so then shneim yachlokus, and then we go to the halacha of division of the bird. right down the middle. Now, Amar Rabbi Chanina Rov v'karav hochin achar Rov. The Gemara over here has a really interesting conceptualization, and that is, what if I have competing values? What if, let's say, I have karov, which is the determinant of proximity, and I also have rov, which is another determinant in halacha, majority rules. So what if I have now a clash between rov and karov? So which is going to win? Hochanacha rov. So the Gemara says, rov is going to trump karov. Now, afagav deruba daraisa v'kurva daraisa, afilo hachi ruba adif. Now, the Gemara does not give an explanation, but the Gemara notes that they're both of these determinants are the daraisa concepts. Karov is a daraisa concept. How do we know that? Egla Rufa. I find a mace between two cities. One of those cities is going to need to take responsibility for the dead body. Which one? Karov. The Torah says, take a measuring step, is take and measure. So that we know. Rov, Hochanach Rov, Achari Rabim Lahatos. So we know that Rov is a Doraisa concept. The Gemara does not explain why, but the Gemara says what? The what is, Rov is going to be Karov. Why? Okay, so that's Shir. Meaning, so for that you have to go to Shir to hear why Rov beats out Karov. Yes.
Rov can cause Karov. Because of Rov, it's going to be closer. The likelihood of it being closer. So
But the Karov is a linear measurement. Rov is a population. They're two different concepts.
I realize, because there are more birds here, the likelihood of there being closer.
So that's in other words, that's exactly the point. Meaning that, let's say I have something which is further away, but there's more of it. So now I have competing values. On one hand, that birdhouse is closer. On the other hand, there are more birds in that birdhouse which is further away. So now I have competing values. Which one wins? The Gemara says, Rov is going to be Karov. Now, as far as Y is concerned, okay, so that's why you have to go to Shir. Daf Yomi is just, it's a good start. It's a good starting point. Okay. The Mace of Rav Zera. Haya ha'ir ha'krova el ha'chalal. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk regarding Egla Rufa, which is teaching us the halach of Karov. The Afagav Dikar Chisa Dinefishamina. Now the Gemara assumes, now you have two cities. Now the Torah doesn't describe the two cities, but presumably, isn't the second city that's further away? Couldn't it be that there are more people over there? And the Torah is teaching us that still Karov is going to beat Rov. So the Gemara says, Bidaleka. The Gemara says, yeah, but that was an assumption. And the Gemara says, in one word, it's a wrong assumption. The case in the Torah of two cities is talking about where the population of the two cities are equal, and therefore the only determining factor is proximity. So the Gemara says, Valeso Basa Rubadama. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. I understand now that you have two cities that are close, but don't you have a worldwide population? And can we now take, if Rov really beats Karov, can we say that the killer is coming not from either one of the two cities, but from somewhere else, where there clearly is more people and wherever that may, somewhere else may be. So the Gemara says, Be'yoshevitz ben Harim. No. The Torah's case is talking about where the murder was found between two mountains, which basically means nobody else from any, from no one from anywhere else is coming around here. In other words, the murder has got to be from one of these two cities. Okay. Tana Napal and Himsa Bitso Khamisha Mama Hare Shah Balhashava Afa Gav the Ika Akhrina Tanafish Mine. Again we turn to our Mishnah. So there's a bird found between two birdhouses. And the Mishnah says, what's the determinant? Karov, proximity. Now again, aren't we going to assume that the further birdhouse has more birds? And the Gemara says, no, we're not going to assume that, but the Laika. The Gemara says very succinctly, no, we're only talking, the Mishnah is only talking about a case where the number of birds in each of the birdhouses are the same, and so therefore the only left, the only determinant left is going to be proximity. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, what about the case in the Mishnah where the bird fell out, it's more than 50 amas away from the birdhouse. Now if there's no other birdhouse around, so who else do you think it belongs to? So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, no, we're talking about where the bird is hopping, meaning the bird's not yet flying. The bird is only hopping. And if the bird is hopping, a bird cannot hop more than 50 amas. A bird cannot hop more than 50 amas. So if the bird is found outside of 50 amas from the birdhouse, I know there are no other surrounding birdhouses. I don't really have an explanation where it came from. But also at the same time, there's an empirical reality, which is birds don't hop more than 50 amas. Therefore, it can't come from this birdhouse. Therefore, finders keepers. We'll end today on the following note. By Rav Yirmiyah, raglo achas besoch nun ama, v'raglo achas chutz mechamishim ama mahu. Rav Yirmiyah asks the following question. What if the bird has 1 foot within 50 amas and 1 foot without 50 amas? What would be then the halacha then in terms of ownership? In terms of the finder. Now the Gemara then comments, v'alda of kula Rav Yirmiyah mibei midrasha. And over this question they took Rav Yirmiyah and they excused him from the Beis Medrash. You like how I was so polite in the way I described it? The Aldaf Ku Rashi. In other words, too much of a nudnik, says Rashi. And therefore he was excused from the Beis Medrash. Interesting Tosfos over here. Tosfos says, Valdav Kula Rabbi Yirmiyah Mebe Midrasha, right, third to last Tosfos, Ein Lefarsh Mishum Dabai Milsa Dol Shechicha Klal. In other words, it's not, says Tosfos, it doesn't have to do with the fact that the case is so improbable. Deheches Ramad de Raglachas Toch Hamishim Raglachas Chutzlam Hamishim Bitsimsum Deha Ashkechan de Masiz Nanami Bechai Gavna. Tosfos makes a fantastic point. You know, the case of Rav Yirmiyah is so far-fetched. Look back at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah talked about a case where the bird was exactly between two birdhouses. Okay, so clearly the Mishnah is talking about a case of precision. So it's not so crazy for Rav Yirmiyah to ask such a question. Rabbeinu Tam says the insolence of Rav Yirmiyah has to do with the fact that once a Chachamim give a shear, we don't play with the shear. Meaning, that is the shear. When the Chachamim say that birds don't hop more than 50 amas, it's not like, well, what about a little bit more? No, Chachamim have a shear, and that is the shear. So the excusing of Rav Yirmiyah has to do with the fact that what Rav Yirmiyah was really calling into question was shearei Chachamim. That allowed for his dismissal from the Beis Medrash.